Hey people, this is episode 233, and this episode features just myself and Just Bender. And on this episode, we talk a pretty solid deep dive into the Tomorrow War. And just so you know, spoilers, lots and lots of spoilers. We then take a little bit of a deep dive into the criticisms from one Stephen Dorff, and should he be criticizing Hollywood? And then we also jump into the regular old pop culture stuff that we do in the Throw It to Missy segment. I know I'm not selling it too hard, but it's kind of like at the end of the day, and I'm kind of doing this, and I got to get it out real fast, so you didn't get a lot of enthusiasm from me, but trust me, we had a good time. Hopefully next week, hopefully we have an episode next week. I'll be out of town for work, but we'll see what happens. Regardless, you're listening to episode 233, and that will happen right after this bomb goes off, which is about now.
Yeah, it's
2 hour movie too is the problem.
Yeah, but they're releasing one every Friday for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and me and Missy went to sit down and watch it later last night thinking, oh, we'll watch one more 45 minute to an hour show, and then she's like, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Fuck no.
I almost didn't watch the Tomorrow War because it was like 2.5 hours.
Well, that said, we're back. And this episode is episode 233 for one. I don't think we've said that in a long time. I always do it on the intro. But this episode does not feature Bombcast J. It does not feature the flop. We might see a Silver Badger, not next week, but the week after.
Which is crazy because I don't think I'll be here that week.
And,
it sucks.
And I'm gone next week. So all it is just me and Bender.
It's just me.
It's like episode 1 and 1B all over again.
Yeah.
He said that he's going to make his triumphant return. Well, he said the week of the 19th. Yeah, so that's 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today.
If it's like that Monday, I might be able to do it. But that's Wednesday. I'm going to Table Rock with the fam.
Well, considering we've never recorded on a Wednesday, we might be able to get it in before. Maybe we'll do a Sunday. No, yeah, I can't do Sunday. That's the 18th, mine and Missy's anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
She will not.
Dude, she would love it.
She'd love it so much. Hey, Jeremy, just bring the guys over.
Just bring the whole gang over.
In fact, let's do a comic book-related episode.
We've all been together so long, it's like we're married
to each
other, sort of.
There's nothing she'd love to do to celebrate our 12th anniversary. Comic book talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or sports.
Or sports and comic books. How about we do athletes with comic book related nicknames like Flash for Dwayne or for Dwight Howard or not Dwight Howard, Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Superman for Shaq.
Yeah.
So a lot of good ones.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We should probably put that in the old
We just wrote an episode for the future. But this episode though, is a day we recorded a day after a 3-day holiday weekend with this past Sunday. As we said here, it's a Tuesday, but this past Sunday was the 4th of July. Now, we did spend Saturday together for Missy's birthday, her 44th birthday.
Threw some axes.
We did throw axes. Then we threw some bocce ball. Where my neighbor got really intense about it and also cost us the game at the same time. But blame me the whole time.
Oh, yeah. He did nothing wrong.
Yeah. And then Sunday was the 4th of July. So you said you guys didn't do much, but how was it overall, the old 4th of July?
It was pretty good. Nobody lost a finger or an eye, so I consider that a win.
You weren't like a hockey goalie that died.
Yeah.
That's a bad one.
You know, the kids are getting a little older. Vera's 6, and Harry's...
You did see that story, by the way, didn't you?
Yeah, I did see that. That sucks.
You gave me one of those awesome,
I didn't see it, and
but,
I was just like...
But you really didn't know the story, but you wanted to say yeah, so...
No, I didn't see it. I didn't read it, but I was just like, 20-year-old dude did something stupid with fireworks.
Yes. Yeah. Professional hockey goalie. Headline.
Yeah.
24-year-old hockey goalie dies in 4th of July accident.
He's not with the Lightning or who's the other ones in the championship right now.
But that's just a proof that hockey can one-up every player in toughness, because if you remember, Jason Pierre-Paul a few years ago blew his fingers off in a 4th of July. Hockey player said, fuck you, I'll kill myself.
All or nothing, baby.
Yeah. Tom would appreciate that. He's a kick it too soon. Anyway, back to you.
No, just the kids all survived. That was all I was really worried about. The 6-year-old and the 2-year-old wanted to do sparklers and stuff, so that was about the extent of letting him do anything. I let her do a Roman candle, which made me nervous, but she didn't kill me or anyone else, so I guess it was a win.
Do you remember, and I don't think they do this anymore because I kind of tested it this past 4th, but do you remember when you couldn't get near the back of the Roman candle either?
Yeah, because they fell out or something, right?
Yeah, it was like it would
spark out.
Yeah, but now I think they've got the Roman candle technology down to a science where you can... You're fine.
But that fear still, like, resonates in me. Like, I had her holding it up, and she had it up, like, at eye level. I was like, let's bring that down a little bit.
I did the same thing to Hayden, And Hayden's 11, so I still
made
her.
I'm holding my arm up like you guys can see me.
That's, visual stories are great on podcasts. Yeah. Ours was same. Ours was pretty late. We played a lot of Can Jam. For having really no sports, not IQ whatsoever, Dwayne's remarkably good at Can Jam and throwing.
Yeah. Well, he's like 9 feet tall. He just sets it over there.
Well, Dwayne does everything like he bowls. He throws very hard and straight, and that does well for Can Jam. Yeah. Will, for my short friend Will, my buddy, old buddy Will, he came over.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he was very good at Can Jam, and then me and Barry just love Can Jam. So. Yeah. And then this year, Barry's daughter, Tia, she played with us, and Missy played with us. Missy's surprisingly good at Can Jam, especially drunk.
So Can Jam is basically, for those that don't know, it's basically washers with a frisbee.
Sort of, yeah. You got two cylinders, and there's a slot in it, and it's a team game.
Team sport.
Got to have a beer in your hand. Yeah.
I was going to ask that. You guys definitely play beer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the rules say you have to can only use one hand, so you should put a drink in your hand. It's a drinking game.
Yeah, I didn't think I've ever read the rules.
So my neighbor, Barry's daughter, Tia, who also is my neighbor, but she's never there. She's at the age where she's got a boyfriend, so she's always over to boyfriends. Her and her boyfriend, for the purpose of this conversation, we'll call him Ricardo, because that's all I called him on Sunday, because his name's Richard. This is the first.
Ricardo?
Yeah, this is Ricardo. This is the first time Ricardo met Barry, my neighbor.
Oh, wow.
And he wanted to come over and play with us, is what she, the way she framed. Actually, she texted her dad and said, hey, Ricardo wants to come over and play with Jeremy and Nerman. Is that okay? And he's like, well, what the fuck am I? Yeah. You know, but he come over. Oh, and I take it back. Ross was here for a little bit. Okay. So a friend of mine last year, Jeff, played. Can Jam, and at the time we saw Jeff, he was the worst player we've ever seen. Ross passed Jeff on how bad he was, and then Ricardo passed Ross on being the worst player. I'm convinced that Vera might go toe-to-toe with them.
Really?
Now, everybody can get to knocking it into the can. Yeah, it's the frisbee throw.
Yeah, it's the frisbee throw.
I think he went a couple of times completely perpendicular to the game over into the neighbor's yard. Like, I don't even know how you do that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you have to intentionally throw that bat, right? Like, I even asked him at
have
one point.
Have you never thrown a frisbee?
Don't think so. And I even asked him at one point, I go, you sucking up to your future father-in-law? Is that what's going on here? Okay. And he's like, no. I was like, because you're on his team, so you can be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it'd probably do you good to try to win.
he did not. But so that was our 4th. But our 5th was spent watching something that you watched and texted on the 4th or what have you.
I think it was the 5th.
Our 5th morning.
That morning, yeah.
And so Missy and I sat down. It's very rare I get her to watch a science fiction movie, but Chris Pratt's one of those actors that can command her attention regardless of what he's in. So we sat down and watched The Tomorrow War. And I said, that's great, because you liked it. The critics did not like it. And I actually liked it. We'll get to our ratings here in a little bit. So I said, maybe we should start a segment for any time we watch a movie that the critics hate.
Yep.
We'll call it Bombcast versus the Critics. This episode, Bombcast versus the Critics, is all about The Tomorrow War. For those that do not know, it is starring Chris Pratt, Sam Richardson, who plays the funny black guy in almost a million different movies. Mm-hmm. We almost watched Werewolves Within.
Is that out?
It's VOD for like $6.
Oh, man, I'm going to get that.
Yvonne Strahovski? Strahovski?
Yeah, from Chuck fame.
Yeah, she's from Chuck fame. She's also from Dexter fame, and she's from something else that's pretty big, pretty good. Like, very, very much genre-related.
Handmaid's Tale,
but that's not the one I'm thinking of. There's another one that she's... That would...
Very pretty blonde.
Yeah, pretty blonde. Betty Gilpin and more, plus... I save this for last. A ripped J.K. Simmons.
Yeah,
just who and Chris Pratt described him as having that those prison muscles.
Yeah, dude, his beard and like, we're gonna stick to this for a second. His his beard and muscles. I only want to see him as a grizzled war vet in everything from here on.
Yeah, he pulled it off well. Yeah. So let's get into what the critics had to say. What I basically did is I highlighted some critics' sound bites or clip sound bites, some blurbs. Mm-hmm. But I started with the Rotten Tomatoes score of it. So the aggregate critic score is 54%. The Metacritic score is 45%. IMDb has it a 6.7. Now, the audience score is 82%. But that wasn't without some complaints from the audience. And so here's what some of the critics say. The Tomorrow War shows no signs of tomorrow. We'll get to that in a second. Millions had to die so that one family could hug. Cool. And again, we're going to break some of these down here with our thoughts. 0 points for originality. Here's another quote. What's depressing is that the director, Chris McKay, is a skilled satirist who, in previous outings, gleefully pilloried the very same tired and overdone genre conventions that he presents here as straight-faced storytelling. Here's another one. The major point seems to be action piled on more action, all revolving around the premise that tramples credibility at nearly every turn. Now, that was just five of them I picked, and I do go at those five here in a second. But here was Twitter, some of the general consensus from Twitter, from the fans. Mm-hmm. Third act is basically an Aliens movie.
Yeah.
And then the other is that the logical ending of this movie was 40 minutes before the credit roll. Now,
I think that's probably fair.
We'll start there. So my thoughts on the film, and this is, I want your thoughts as well. That's accurate.
Yeah.
But I also put, that's the same thing that happened with Lord of the Rings, and we consider those movies masterpieces.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say this movie is a masterpiece, but I can forgive that 40-minute thing, considering it's just supposed to be a fun sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
It's really two movies.
It is two movies. And, like, I would say that this movie was a little long, but not too long. Like, Bad Boys 2, for example, is the definition of a third act that was not needed.
Well, it was hour and 45 minutes before the last 45
yeah,
minutes.
Exactly. And this was a little bit, it's similar
this
to
like
that, but not that long.
Yeah. With about 40. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't too bad.
They
and
also,
it kept me entertained.
For the person that said there's for the Tomorrow War shows no signs of tomorrow, my only rebuke to that is I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
So I just kind of, when I don't know what your witty quip says, I throw it away.
Because he jumps back and forward in the same?
I think they were trying to be funny,
yeah,
and it was stupid.
I'm trying to give him credibility where
yeah.
there is none to be found.
So yes, the family did fight so they could end up hugging, but I think that the people miss the point that it was this one man's love for his family that essentially led to him saving the world.
Yeah.
So yes, millions had to die, but not so he could hug, but so he could figure out how to kill the alien. And
but
by the
I
way,
think also you're missing the other point in the movie is that bad dads create really good heroes.
Yeah, or well, he wasn't a bad dad, but he ended up getting depressed. And there's a whole
there's
I worry,
a whole story in there where apparently he wasn't great.
Well, he wasn't. He was depressed.
Yeah,
he was depressed, and I.
But he didn't end on a high note with his daughter. I guess.
But I worry that I don't know how the depression story fits into it, and so we're gonna get a little. Well, let's come back to that because I consider that a little bit of a plot hole.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I wanted to not go, I don't want to dive into it right now because I want to make sure we say this first. For the person that said it tramples on credibility at nearly every turn. I want to know what credibility are they referring to, because at the end of the day,
is it the time travel credibility?
It's just a movie about time travel, and how do we assign or hang weight on the credibility of a sci-fi movie that's about time travel?
And I want to touch on that time travel thing too, like, but we can get to it.
And then I put originality ? Okay, maybe it's not original, but it's also a sci-fi movie, and there's been almost everything done in sci-fi.
Yeah.
So,
I think it borrows the better elements of the movies it's borrowing
All
from.
Movies borrow, and that's the
yeah.
thing, you know? And then what I wanted to say, too, to the person that says, director Chris McKay is a skilled satirist who, in his previous outings, just so you know, his previous outing was Lego Batman and Lego Batman 2. While those are, especially the first one, is a fantastic movie.
Yep. I don't think I finished 2.
Not sure why that makes his greatness his downfall in this movie.
Yeah.
He's made a bunch of movies and directed things like Robot Chicken. So the guy is saying his satire is so good at those that his greatness is being bruised in the sci-fi movie.
I think the problem is that they put comedians in there and they didn't do a lot of comedy. Like the
Sam Richardson was the comedic guy.
And the girl.
Oh yeah, the one that
I forget her name.
Yeah,
she's always like
she got pouty face. She's got the face of a. I'm not saying she's ugly, but she's got the face of a hound dog that's always droopy and sad looking.
Yeah, but yeah, so they're usually pretty funny, and Sam was. He did have the comedy bits in this, and Chris Pratt really didn't have any. Satirical takes.
Yeah.
He kind of was just like a droopy, no-nonsense guy through the whole movie, which is a bit of a stretch for him, I'd say.
So let's get to the little bit, before we give our ratings, let's get a little bit to some of what I considered the plot holes.
Okay, so let's go, this is spoilers from here on out.
Yeah, spoiler warnings, we won't get into like the very end, last 40.
We will.
We don't have to spoil anything.
Because there was one thing that bothered me.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it. Well, let's start with his timeline. If Loki has taught us anything, and more importantly, Avengers, Endgame, once you change an event, you create a parallel time or branching timeline. Now, this timeline, no matter what, still happened, but now there's a new timeline from where those points diverge, in theory.
Yeah.
So this one, that's why you don't fizzle out when you go back and change something, so to speak. You know what
but
I mean?
You can't fizzle out because nobody can... go forward in time that isn't already dead in that timeline.
Well, in this movie. Yeah, yes. In this movie. But I mean, like, for instance, what I wanted to say is that, so she, being the colonel, and this is a spoiler, so the colonel, she knew him to be a dad that got depressed and disappeared, but he survived regardless. Did he go back in time and... Like, there becomes a plot hole there, because once he meets her, that instantly changed what he was going to be, regardless of whether she told him or not.
Yeah.
So, we have to assume that there was his initial timeline was him going forward, just going to the Tomorrow War, coming back and living his life badly.
Yeah. And so he... No, I don't think that's how this works.
Just think that by them coming back, it changed everything.
He was already dead in 2029. He dies in 2029. He jumps forward to 2048.
Yeah.
And the only way that you can move forward is to already be dead in the timeline.
Yeah, but she knew him before he died.
But she knew him when he died. She was 16.
Yeah, so she had 7 years with him.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. But by the
he changes that by going back, jumping back.
Well, just I argue, just meeting her changed that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's what I mean.
I don't think anybody else had that paradox that those two had. And that's the other thing that kind of doesn't make sense, because he was like so heartbroken about her dying in this version of time, when you literally are holding on to the answer for that version to never exist.
Yeah, well, it does exist. That's what I mean. That continued to exist, but for as far as your reality goes,
nothing.
No, as far as his reality goes, like I said, that branch continues with, but there's a branch off where his goes.
Yeah.
So those people are all dead.
But her whole point in sending him back with the...
was to stop it.
Was to stop that particular timeline.
Well, but she can't... Remember, we're using comic book logic here.
Yeah.
She can't stop what happened. But what she can do is prevent... He can go back in time and from that point prevent that for that...
different version.
For that branch of their reality, which he does. But there's another problem I have.
I don't think we're doing paradoxical universes in this one, though. I think it's just...
Well, we don't know, because we're also talking about... really cool looking mean aliens.
Yeah, those aliens were fucking
pretty awesome.
Here's
another tip point I want to make about this too, and I'm not going to diverge off into this movie that I give a 2 out of 5 to, but there's one on Netflix right now called The Ice Road. The special effects in it are the worst special effects.
I see. I'm out if they're that bad.
Well, it's and they really don't have a lot. It's just the very beginning when the trucks are getting blown around and explosion, and it's bad. You're like, oh boy, so what happened is, I can only surmise what happened in this film, is that it was being made for the theater, and then they realized, well, this movie, I mean, you know, not that Lawrence Fishburne and Liam Neeson are bad actors. In fact, they're great.
Oh, you watched this?
Yeah.
I just saw it.
In fact, they're really great actors, you know, have done really great jobs throughout their career, but I don't think they're the kind of actors that we can hold out and really put this movie into theaters.
Yeah.
Let's just release it. Just finish it up. Whatever you can do. Don't spend a lot of money and give it to Netflix. I think that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But this, for Amazon Prime, had incredibly good special effects.
I think it was almost all the way done before the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, and we saw that with Without Remorse, the Michael B. Jordan, Tom Clancy movie. Mm-hmm. That was good special effect. And I think you're right. I think what we're seeing... The point is, though, for a movie that went to streaming without even having to pay for, mm-hmm. it was looked like a really big budget movie.
Yeah, and I even paused it a couple times because Vera was watching it with me.
Yeah.
And she would ask a bunch of questions and this and that, so I'd pause it. And there's one scene where I paused on the alien, like, and the special effects, like, just, like, even in a still frame, look really, really
good.
Did
you think there were times where it was supposed to be in 3D?
Yeah, sometimes
where they
like
come at you,
yeah,
and,
like
and
especially
their faces,
on the, especially like the very first time you see the tail on the
yeah, and his
and
face,
spins.
Then you see his face jump
yeah.
at you.
Little inconsistent on how they die. Like apparently the underbelly is
the
only
stomach and then throat.
Yeah, but I mean like they're unloading like whole clips into some of them's guts,
and they're still coming
for
it. It's kind of like it'd be a perfect shot. Now they do have like they can be blown up, they can
yeah,
be caught
yeah,
on fire,
yeah.
and they do have guns that are strong enough to pierce them. Except for the queen, spoiler.
Yeah. And they also glided for a while.
That was out
of
nowhere.
Cool,
yeah, they're flying
thing.
Squirrels.
I was like, this is ridiculous.
So let's get back to the plot thing. So first off, when you saw J.K. Simmons and you saw what they had done with him, I told Missy, well, two things I told Missy, and this is a big spoiler. One, I said, J.K. Simmons is coming back. Mm-hmm. And when they get back to Earth and they're like, we just don't understand how they got here. And I looked at Missy and I go, volcanoes.
Yep.
And Missy goes, how did you know that? I go, they made a big point about that kid.
Yeah, kid. Like, they get all these expert scientists, and I think it's stupid, but it was kind of fun. They're like, I know a guy, and it's some 11th grader in high
yeah.
school. They don't go to a scientist.
So my other problem with the plot is he comes back in time, and the military is essentially at this point being at least, not if not ran, supervised by these future people.
Mm-hmm.
And they know he's the son of the colonel, and he knows he has the serum, but no one will listen to him still.
Yeah. It's like they took the parts of Terminator 2 where like they go back in time and everybody, like the one guy knows everything, except they sent everybody else back instead of one person, and they're like, oh, ignore that guy, we're also going to send back later. Like,
yeah.
They reverse Terminator 2 in a dumb way there.
So one, we should have, that's when he come back in time, they should have come up with a way of getting ready for him, so they speak.
Yeah.
They still did have the problem that they didn't know how they hit on Earth, and they figured that out. But
pretty fast.
So that, from that point on, is the logic, where the logic ending should have happened, and then they go on a bug hunt, like in Aliens.
Yep.
Which, why didn't they just nuke it? Why didn't they just load when they got in there and the things were asleep? Because they only woke up because they started stabbing them.
Yeah.
So just put all that C4 around the thing and just nuke them.
So two things with that. One, the chances of finding that ship in a barren wasteland.
Well, no, they had gauges.
No, they didn't. They relied on the gauges on their thing to go wrong.
But he said, is anybody else's...
Listen,
no, there
was a real National Treasure 2 moment.
It was their readings, because they said they were looking for hotspots,
yeah,
is what they were looking for.
Yeah, but it was still you could have walked up forever, and you could have walked for years and never found it.
Also, way to stuff in global warming as
yeah.
a bad deal, you know.
And yeah, that was pretty good. But then, and if you are going to just, like, stab them all, why wouldn't you stab the big one first?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, that one's the queen. That's
yeah.
the most important one.
That he knows, him and the him and the black guy,
yeah.
which I did think, and I don't know his name, and I apologize, but I did think he
I've
was...
I've never seen him in anything.
He was an enjoyable character
yeah.
in the film.
Yeah, all
he
the characters were pretty solid.
The other part of that, which, you know, where it gets a little silly, and again, we are getting into, like you're right, Bender, we're getting into massive spoilers. How he ended up beating the queen, also a little silly.
So, I have no problem with him hitting her with a snowmobile.
You have a problem with him
jumping
on her
back. You can't pull the same move twice in 5 minutes in a movie?
Yeah.
Come on.
That one was a little silly. I did
and
like...
he stabbed her in the...
Okay, another plot hole, and this one's not as big, but So they get the initial battle that they survive trying to go on a they went on a Suicide Squad mission. It was the same mission from Suicide Squad.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. They survived it, and they look at them. The girl that looks at them and says, "You and him," pointing to Chris Pratt and Sam Richardson's characters, "you're being redeployed. Are you guys? Or no, you two are being redeployed. Chris Pratt, you're coming with us." And the black guy's like, "I don't know if I could do this again." And he turns and looks at him and says, "You can." And then you literally don't see him again until he survives.
Yeah.
And there's so many people who are coming back with fake legs and missing arms.
Yeah.
But he just makes it out. As,
like I said, that other guy who was a badass just protected him the whole time.
I guess so.
Like, that's another sort of plot hole in this that they don't really get into. Like, I get the fact that you have to already be dead to move into the future because then you don't affect the timeline. But those people from the future, their parents can't move. There's got to be a weird overlap, right? Where those future soldiers' parents and, you know, like that girl who died in the past when she went back in the past, is that, how does that affect her life?
Yeah, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Overall, though, if you take all of that overthinking that the internet wants to do...
Yeah, that they love to do. It's their hobby.
I had a good time.
I enjoyed it. So
I was really going to be annoyed if... And this is another major spoiler. Because the aliens are dumb, to say the least. They're like bees, essentially. Like, they follow their queen or whatever.
And there's a lot of them.
And there is a lot of them. But I was really going to be annoyed if they were flying spaceships. Because they had... Like, the queen shows a little intelligence, but everybody else is a drone.
When I found out it was a spaceship, I was like, okay.
Yeah. I was like, man, I was thinking maybe they were going to be, like, underground volcano monsters or something.
Now, there is a certain...
But I was okay with the way they explained it.
Me too. But they also could have... They could have also explained it, I guess, if they really wanted to. And I wouldn't have minded this, that them in hibernation for so long mutated them or something.
Yeah.
But at no point were those aliens that we saw capable of flying anything. Kind of like in A Quiet Place 2, how the aliens are not capable of driving a boat to an island, but yet it does.
really?
Yeah, so let's give your review, your out of five Universal Untappd scale of rating stuff.
Out of five for a summer popcorn flick, which is exactly what it was, I'd give it a 4 out of 5. I had a good time.
I gave it a 3.75. I could probably...
You know, do 3.75. I was going to give it that.
Well, you can do it as long as it's on the Untappd scale. And
3.75.
I would give it a 4 if I would have been drunk watching it,
because
then I would have enjoyed it even more.
Yeah, but it's... I mean, it's...
But it's a fun movie.
Like, if you break down Independence Day, it's pretty fucking stupid.
Oh, yeah. Independence Day's not a great movie.
No, but it's fun.
It's got some fun moments. That old president speech. Bill Pullman's president speech.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I put that it's my only note that for people other than the long list of notes we just gave, it's worth watching.
For sure. Just check your brain at the door.
But I will pivot off of that. Speaking of harsh criticisms, I will pivot off of a story about Mr. Stephen Dorff that I just read. Have you seen this?
I did see this, and I didn't understand it.
So here's what he said. This is criticism that come from inside the Hollywood circle. Stephen Dorff, he goes hard at the MCU and at ScarJo herself, but he tries to make it seem like he's not really mad at her. But here's what he said. "I still hunt out the good shit because I don't want to be in a movie like Black Widow. It looks like garbage to me. It looks like a bad video game. I'm embarrassed for those people. I'm embarrassed for Scarlett. I'm sure she got paid $5-7 million. No, probably more like 50. By the end of the day. But I'm embarrassed for her. I don't want to be in those movies. I really don't. I'll find the kid director that's going to be the next Kubrick, and I'll act for him instead." More on that. He goes, "This year the Oscars were the most embarrassing I've ever seen. My business is becoming a big game show. You have actors that don't have a clue what they're doing. You have filmmakers that don't have a clue what they're doing. We're on these little boxes on these streamers, TV, film. It's all one big clusterfuck of content now." He then goes on to say he has no regrets over his career choices, including choosing to star in John Waters' 2000 comedy Cecil B. DeMented, which isn't a bad movie. Oh, he says he got criticism to be in some shitty movie that his agents recommended instead of that movie. He goes, "But why wouldn't I do a John Waters movie? The other movie sucks." They're like, "Well, it's not going to do anything for your career money-wise, but I'm going to go to the Cannes, and we're going to have a standing ovation, and kids around the world, art students, and John Waters fans are going to worship this fucking movie," which they do to this day. what I wouldn't do, why wouldn't I do that? So I fired those agents. So from those statements, I get that he doesn't like the MCU. There's actors, directors out there that don't. Yeah. Tarantino on that, he was on Joe Rogan a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and it was awesome. And but he didn't. He said, I don't want to make those movies because I don't like special effects. He goes, but
he wants to do that Star Trek film.
He goes, people, yeah, but he wants to do a Tarantino one, and he's not doing that.
No,
but he goes. He said that. I don't want to do special effects like that because I don't do special effects like that.
That's not his style.
That's what he said. He goes, there certainly is a place. Those movies need special effects. He goes, what people take out of context is that they wanted me to CG the car crashes in Grindhouse. I ain't doing that.
Yeah.
He goes, I need to...
I will kill an actress.
Yeah, which is what he would do. He goes, but... he goes, you know, so back to Dwarf, though. So what this is saying to me... It's insinuating. Hold on, I got to text Missy and say, "Can you get Louie?"
He's a whining.
Yeah, he's being a butthead.
So, let's go. While you're doing that, let's go through Stephen Dorff's.
Oh, no, don't do it. Save it because I've done that. Okay. I've done that. But so to me, that insinuates that he wants to be either in critically acclaimed films or films with massive cult following. So I looked up every film he did, and I just went from Cecil B. DeMille. Because I think we can all agree,
I don't know what that is.
Blade is perfect.
Blade's great.
Especially
for its time.
First off, Cecil B. DeMille got a 53% critic score and a 76% or 67% fan score. So that's not the most...
That's not terrible.
That's not terrible, but it's also not great. So, but then he went from that movie, and he did a movie called Deuces Wild, 3% critic, 51% fan.
I saw that.
Then he went Fear.com, 3% critic, 18% audience. Then here's my favorite, and I didn't do a lot of these, but Den of Lions, I want to point out, 0% from the critics and 2% from the fans. Now, I did this movie called Nanking, N-A-N-K-I-N-G. It was 96% critic and 88% fans. And
that's still like 1 for 9, though.
He's got a whole lot. And now, first off, Stephen Dorff did a lot of movies. He's got a whole lot in that 60, 70% range, but there's a whole lot that is under 10%. So, by his own admission, he wants to do movies for up-and-coming directors that are going to have these big cult audiences. And I would argue he doesn't.
Yeah, he did Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, from 2011, which is Nick Swardson's movie that was... It's got a Metascore of 9.
Yeah,
it's... And a 3.2 IMDb rating.
Yeah, awful.
1 out of 10. Like, nobody... Like, that ruined Nick Swardson's career.
Yeah, well... Yeah, and Nick Swardson eating a lot of food and getting a little chunky kind of changed him, too.
I mean, Adam, but he's friends with Adam Sandler.
He so was also fine. On Grandma's Boy, which is pretty awesome. He's great in that. But, yeah, why is... So, here's what I mean, first off, I think when you say, what, is she going to make $5-7 million? I didn't look it up, but we should look up and see what ScarJo is getting paid for that, because I got to imagine it's double-digit millions. And, by the way, Scarlett Johansson is someone that has made critically acclaimed movies and movies that fans have liked.
Yeah.
So
she's gotten her own fair share of, like, criticism for whitewashing, usually traditionally Asian characters. So I don't think Stephen Dorff is going to be a blip on her radar.
Well, why even take a shot at him?
I don't either. Like,
and he is right. There's movies out there, namely in the DCU, that are a little suspect, and they're just kind of CG fests and video game looking. But the Marvel, for the most part, the Marvel movies pack a lot of heart. And I don't think that I also find it curious that he, I guess it's just because it's timely, he doesn't go after Robert Downey or Chris Evans.
No.
Or
it makes you look sexist.
Chris Pratt. I mean, you're not going after them.
Maybe he screen read for a role and didn't get it or something. I don't know. It says that she earned $15 million for Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, and also
which weren't her vehicles.
So she's getting about $5 million per movie. This is just like right out of the gate off Yahoo, and it says in total she's earned about $75 million from Marvel movies.
So she's doing okay.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Unfortunately, that just shows you some pay discrepancy too, because I imagine that Robert Downey Jr. makes a lot per Iron Man film.
I just listened to a Caravan of Garbage on Iron Man 1, the first one. He got Terrence Howard was the highest paid actor in Iron Man 1. He only got $500,000 for the first
one. Oh, because he was a gamble.
Yeah.
He was a gamble.
They were real worried about him.
And then in the second one, he got a massive increase.
Yeah.
And Terrence Howard wanted more money. And they were like, and he's like, you know, they're like, sorry, we'll put Don Cheadle in there.
Demands, yeah.
And Don, turns out Don Cheadle's a pretty well respected actor.
Yeah.
More on Don Cheadle in a little bit. I hear Martin Scorsese. He didn't go at him, but he's like, they're not my cup of tea.
Again, that's his. He doesn't do that type of film.
Yeah, and there's some other people that have said they don't like him. To all those people, I'm like, here's the only criticism of not the MCU, but I think to the studios about movies like the MCU. They have so wrapped up the cost of making a movie into marketing and publicity
that it impossible.
You have to make these movies in order to make profits in the box office.
Yep.
And that has hurt low budget and very independent film. I mean, you know,
it's driven the price of movie tickets and everything up. And like, I don't want to pay $15 a ticket or $8 or whatever it is to go see like romantic comedy as much as I would rather do that and see a blockbuster.
I will say this, something that was said in a Tarantino film or the interview too, because Joe Rogan said, you know, I was watching Superbad last week and I was just talking about it on another podcast, and he goes, that movie's fucking great. He goes, and you couldn't make that today. And Tarantino goes, why couldn't you? And he's like, people say that about a lot of stuff. He goes, they wouldn't let you make that movie. He goes, they tried to tell me not to hire Travolta. They tried to tell me to remove the ear-cutting scene from Reservoir Dogs, and they can all go fuck themselves. And Joe said, well, you can say that because you're Quentin Tarantino. And he goes, I would argue that I'm Tarantino because I've said that over the years. He goes, it's not even a cyclical thing. He goes, because trust me, I lived through the 80s. He goes, the 80s were as PC and in some cases worse. We made the most fluffy movies in the 80s. He goes, there were some breakthroughs. He goes, but when I set out to make Reservoir Dogs, I said, hey, I want to make one of those dirty 70 movies. And that's what I did. And he goes, here's the big secret on making what you want. Even if that use drops the N-word as much as I have in my movies, even if you get criticism like Daisy Dormeru being beat up and that's demeaning to women, he goes, if the movie's good enough, the praise will far outweigh the criticism.
Well, Seth Rogen said similar things. Like, he came out, somebody asked him about making movies now that any regrets. He goes, I don't regret anything that I've done. He goes, are some of my jokes that I made back in the early 2000s tasteless now? Yeah, but it was a different time. Will I make those same jokes in these movies that I make now? No, not necessarily, but I don't.
But
I understand that we've grown as a society, and I'm not mad at anybody who takes offense, but I'm not going to apologize for something
And I got a feeling that if Seth Rogen makes a movie that's set in the early 2000s or late 90s,
he's probably going to
put those jokes in there, because that's how you tell a story.
Yeah.
We can't we do cross a weird line to when we start telling stories about points in history.
Yeah.
And leave out things that happened in that point, or leave out the way the culture was there.
Well, I think that's kind of the whole argument in society as a whole now, if we're going to, not to be in politics, but there's one side that's like, we should really tell history how it really went. And there's another side that's like, I don't want to feel bad about all the things that we did that
weren't
great.
Right. The other thing that, you know, he said too is, he goes, you know, I got flack for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They told me, well, there was no black people in it. And they also told me that,
were there black people in Hollywood that often back then?
Well, they also told me that they put Margot Robbie in it, but I didn't give her a bunch of lines. He goes, she spends the majority of the film by herself, and they spend the majority of the film with the Manson family. He goes, it was a movie that took place in 48 hours. He goes, I couldn't. They said, you also didn't touch on Vietnam. You had a character that was a Vietnam vet, and you didn't touch on it. He goes, because in 2 days out of these people's lives, they just didn't think to talk about it.
Yeah.
He goes, it's a story, people.
That's not my favorite Tarantino film. It was fine.
I mean, I love it.
I think it's good. I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. I bet you if I did watch it again, I'd enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But the novelization just came out, apparently.
Yeah, and it's a little thicker, he wrote.
It's thicker. He wrote it, and apparently Cliff Booth killed his wife, and that was a big question.
Well, he admits to it in the movie. He's also now writing a book, and he's about to come out with his own podcast with Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, because he's got one more movie, and he was teasing it.
He's saying he's done after 10 movies.
Yeah, and then he wants to do like books.
Yeah,
and
so his next book is a historical look at Hollywood. He's knows it, and then his podcast is. Called Video Archive, which was the name of the video store that he worked out. Mm-hmm. And each episode, he's going to take a movie that he loved from the 70s, and they're going to break it down.
That's awesome.
And it's going to be great, you know, because he has an enthusiasm.
I don't know, man. Like, 70s is like that. What's that, like, that time point where you just can't go back with a... There's a distinct cutoff between 80s films and 70s films, and I have a tough time watching
them. Well, 70s films were really gritty.
Yeah.
Really dirty. Like, they were a lot more of what his movies are today and stuff, but
yeah.
I get what he's going to do. And he said, there's a chance I'll dip into the 80s. He goes, there were some great movies in the 80s, you know?
Yeah, the 80s were the prime time for dumb college joke movies.
And let's go ahead and spin in the Throw It to Missy, because I'm sure you got some stuff for that. And let's start with...
You really are putting a lot of pressure on me, bro.
Well, if you don't, I still have
some
stuff.
Just kidding.
But let's start with... 80s and great things in the 80s. It's hard to argue that The Goonies wasn't great.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue that Lethal Weapon wasn't great.
Was Lethal Weapon and in the 80s or was that really?
It was 80s. It was
really?
And even Superman, you know, the Superman 1, Superman 2, what should have been Superman 2. All those things have one thing in common, and that's Richard Donner, who passed away this past week.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's a big one, man.
It is a big one.
He was like at one time the name.
Yeah.
As much as Spielberg was. It was like, let's get Donner or Spielberg to make it. It'll make a buku bucks.
There's and I talk about these guys all the time, but they do a deep dive into Superman 1, 2, and 3.
Now, have you ever watched the Donner cut of 2?
No.
Because, you know, he didn't...
Yeah,
he wasn't allowed to fit. The Donner cut's awesome, yeah. I've got the Blu-ray.
They do the deep dive into all these movies and, like, the different stories and everything. It's interesting. It's worth, like, how little money Christopher Reeves made from those movies.
Yeah.
How
he did not make enough money for Good Horse Lessons.
No. Too soon. But no, he did not. Or the fact that I think they let him write one of them, and I think it was the third one, which was really
bad. With Richard Pryor?
Yeah, I think so.
No. People say it's really bad. It's not necessarily a great Superman movie, but it's a fucking entertaining movie.
Yeah, but apparently it's like the bizarro version of a Superman movie. I don't remember much of any of them, to be honest with you. I was very young. But Lethal Weapon was my wheelhouse growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Lethal Weapon defined buddy cop.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the reluctant partnership.
And
Danny Glover even tweeted out, or I don't know if he tweets or not.
Somebody tweeted for him,
sound bites. Said that after he said it's a good sad day for movie making, he goes, Richard Donner is responsible for Lethal Weapon even being conceived. And he goes, and that in my professional career stands as the single thing I'm the most proud of is being in those movies with Mel Gibson.
And I would argue that he's probably the most famous from those.
Yeah, but he was in The Color Purple, and he's, you know, he was in a lot of movies.
He did a lot of dramas,
Magnus Opus.
I'm too old for this.
Yeah,
you know, like you're not getting like
shit.
A real.
Yeah, that was his. I'll be back. But it was you know, great. It's sad that Richard Donner's gone.
Does suck.
But did you bring anything before I go to my next?
Did you ever watch the movie Don't Breathe?
Yes, and we loved it. And the trailer for the second one looks awesome.
Okay, I watched Don't Breathe, and I watched the trailer for the second one, and I was like. I feel like, and this is a spoiler, so if you haven't watched it and you want to watch both of them,
just
go check them out. But, and then come back and listen to this. By the end of Don't Breathe, the whole movie turns. And like he's like this war hero, blind guy who's taking out these hoodlums who are stealing from his house to a real fucking creepster who has got a woman in his basement that he's inseminating, who turned out to be the lady who hit his daughter and killed her. She might have been drunk. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It had a real creepy vibe, which I was fine with. But now they're doing a second one, and he's raising a little. It's just weird.
Well, he's not raising the girl. It's
he's taking care of her.
Taking care of her because, remember, he puts on a good front. And the way I look at it is it was his chance of trying to redeem himself because no one really knows what happened.
Exactly.
But then this gang who know the people
that he killed.
Is that the synopsis?
They're coming hunting him. And they're luring, baiting him.
I don't like that. Like, I think the action's going to be fun, but I just liked how creepy and weird, and like the spin at the end of the first one was very original.
Well, there's a point in the movie where he's telling the little girl, one of the bad guy, quote unquote bad guys, goes, I guess, go ahead, tell him who you really are.
Oh, yeah. And so, I do remember that now.
So he's probably going to be a bad guy again. Yeah. Like, I gave it a good effort.
Yeah.
Now I got to kill some people.
I had to reread the synopsis after I watched it because I was like, I'm in, but I'm like, something in the back of my head is saying, like, he wasn't great.
Yeah, he was not a good guy. Yeah, he was not a good guy.
Oh, this is kind of a dark, twisted ending.
Well, speaking of movies, I watched another movie called No Sudden Move. No Sudden Moves. It's on, I believe, HBO Max. It's brand new.
Oh,
new
did you
HBO
watch
Max.
That Steven Soderbergh
film? Yeah, Steven Soderbergh. So
I wanted to watch that.
So for those that don't know, he directed Ocean's 11, Magic Mike, Contagion, The Informant, so much more.
Yeah.
I will give you a warning, and this doesn't deter me, but it is very much an old school crime movie.
That's thriller, what I like.
Like a Chinatown or something. It stars, and this is great, Benicio del Toro, Don Cheadle, David Harbour, John Hamm, Matt Damon, Brendan Fraser, Kieran Culkin, and so many more people.
I didn't even know Matt Damon was in this.
It's not pertinent to the plot, but it is a slight spoiler.
You had me at Don Cheadle and Matt and
Benicio del Toro. Well, they're the main characters.
Yeah,
and I won't break down what the premise is, but I'll tell you, it is about a 2-hour movie,
mm-hmm.
and I think that Don Cheadle, he talks in a weird voice in it, like a kind of a type period appropriate voice mm-hmm. for a gangster. Mm-hmm. And Benicio del Toro pulls off of a slightly bumbling, just doesn't think through gangster. And there's a
Does he remind you of what's his name in Snatch? He was missing the finger because he didn't really think everything through.
Oh no, different kind. I mean, okay. He's in the mafia, but they don't really want to promote him because they're like, yeah, he's kind of half assets all the time. But it's a double cross movie. You don't know what's going on until the very end of the movie. Well, you do, but you don't know how it's going to end. Satisfying ending and well worth watching. I gave it a 4 out of 5. So give that a go.
Yeah, I wanted to watch it. It was between that and the Tomorrow Wars, and I knew my kids were going to get up at some point, and so I was like, Tomorrow Wars.
Tomorrow Wars is easier than pausing that.
Yeah, I don't want to have to try to remember.
I did have down here Mythic Quest, but we won't get into that since you didn't finish. I got two more things on my list, but I'll throw one to you. What do you got anything else?
No, I think that was... I do, and it's... Do you remember the Jason Statham movie, The Meg?
Meg, yeah.
Okay, there are Steve Alton books. And they're right. I think there's like 9 of them or something.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I knew Meg was a big book at one time.
Yeah, so he wrote Meg, and then there was like a... Then he wrote a sequel, which has to deal with other things. And then he wrote like a bunch of new ones, I guess. And this one's fairly new, realistic. Within like the last 10 years, this the third one technically, called Meg Primal Waters. And I'm listening to it. And it is the cheesiest, most ridiculous shit ever, and I fucking love it. Like when I'm working out or
Meg was big. Oh, Meg was a big book.
Yeah. And so it brings back the main guy from the first book in his family. He's 65 years old and he gets
Jason Statham's character?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's like a little different than he is in the movie.
He teaches people to hunt giant sharks.
Yeah, no. What it is he's down on his luck, and he's out of money, but his wife and kids still love him and everything. But he gets recruited by this reality TV show co-host all these daredevils on a Spanish galleon ship. Well, there's obviously an overarching bad guy who knows that there's more than one megalodon around now, and he's trying to get him killed, and the plot is really fucking stupid, but it's so much fun, and like, I can't stop listening to it.
Should it be a movie?
It should be a movie. And like, I honestly, if they would have just did Statham, if they wouldn't have done Statham, because Statham can't do like a, like this guy is a badass, but he's not like a cocky badass. He just, he sees a moment, reads it, gets it
done.
Well,
he wasn't a cocky guy in the first Meg.
But Statham also always has to be like, he's never in a compromising moment. That's the way he writes his contracts. Yeah. But if they would have done it more to the books, it would have been even better. But it's just so much fun. And if you're looking for something that, like, doesn't matter, It's great.
What are you doing to listen to books? What are you?
I use Hoopla for these guys.
Oh, I don't think I should do more with Hoopla. I should look into Hoopla a little
more. You're writing now, and I don't know how much situational awareness you really need when you're writing. Probably more than you do when I'm.
Yeah,
in
I
my
can't
basement.
Do it. I can't do that.
But when you're on the road and you're at a podcast,
yeah,
it's that's great.
And I do because I've scaled back what podcasts I listen to. But I might dive into a new Tarantino one when it comes out.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely. Like I get tired. I'm a political podcast junkie, but sometimes I get worn out and I just need my brain to check out.
You need mindless fluff.
Yeah, and it's so much fun. Like on the way over here, I was listening to it, and a guy was windsurfing, and a meg came out of the water. And he timed his jump to land on the boat wrong, and so instead the shark's coming to grab him, and he cannonballs into his mouth, and then he flails around and comes out his gill and gets away out and go, I'm fucking King Kong, rah! You know, and then the shark comes back and bites his ass. It's fucking great. I was like, oh man, I'm sitting in your driveway just listening to it. It's so stupid, and I love it.
Well, I've got two more things. Do you got anything else?
No, that was
okay.
It.
Well, I've got two more, and I wanted to go with. I was gonna go save this one for last, but speaking of silly things, I don't know why, but what's with the explosion? And I believe we were ahead of the curve on this.
Yeah.
What's with the explosion of Dom memes on everything now?
Oh, family?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I love it.
We've been, for a couple years now, been making fun of
family.
Family.
Yeah, but now they're everywhere.
Yeah, do you see the one with the Lion King?
No, oh, yeah. Dogs are family, too. John Wick, I saw that one. I got your back. Yeah.
I don't know.
They seem to love them with the Marvel, too, with the Disney stuff.
Yeah.
They really love them with the Disney.
I guess it's leaning into the satire of it.
There's the funny one where Batman says, I'm always going to be alone. He goes, yeah, you are. You got no family.
I didn't see that one. I've seen two different iterations of, like, Mufasa falling and Dom catching him in his car.
Yeah.
And one where he's on the car and, like, reaching out and catching
him.
Yeah,
I've seen that one, too. Yep.
It's good stuff.
I just... some of them do make me giggle, but they, like I noticed one like 3 days ago. Like, yeah. Oh, these are going to be a thing. Or like, this is a thing. And I saw another one. And then like I woke up this morning and my face
it
was
just
like
blew up.
A million of them. Yeah, and it's all different Dom poses.
Did you see the post or the interview? I guess he was on a podcast or some sort of interview on why him and The Rock don't get along.
I don't know, but he's should we worry about his sanity at this point?
Yeah, because did you heard it right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, so. Well, first off, in the movie, they make him look like they're the same size.
Yeah, and The Rock's bigger than him.
Yeah, by like a foot.
it's enough that it's noticeable. Yeah.
But then he said that they didn't get along in Fast 7 or 8, whichever one they're in together.
Yeah, the 8. The last one. Yeah,
no,
last
7,
one, 7.
I think.
They were in 2 together.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Either way, the first one that he didn't really get along with him in is because he said that he wasn't leaning into the character, and he said, you know, these are my heart and soul, and I got to push an actor to get, and I'm paraphrasing, it was more ridiculous and stupid, and I don't remember it.
But it's ridiculous, even the way you're saying it, like, you wrote these characters with your heart and soul, and he wasn't getting the emotional core
of
the character.
Yeah, he wasn't getting the, and he wasn't coming into
of
it.
Of Hobbs,
the guy who ripped his own cast off to go back to fight.
Yeah,
and,
that's 8.
Whatever that one,
yeah,
and
that
then
one's
like
eight.
Chases him around when they're driving a safe in Brazil. Whichever one that one.
That's
is.
The one where he's hunting him in 7.
Yeah. Is that 7? I thought
might
Jesus
even be
Christ.
6. Yeah.
I don't even know.
So he started by hunting him, and then they realized they needed him.
Yeah, everybody always becomes every bad guy becomes a good guy.
Yeah,
it's something like Charlize Theron has. I think. What's his name?
Well, no, Charlize Theron did not become a good guy. She's the bad guy, the big bad.
Is she?
Yeah, she's the
I
big...
I thought she was a good guy. I'm like, no, she was controlling him in 8, right?
Yeah, she's the big bad. She, in fact, she's the one that gets, in this one, 9,
mm-hmm.
His brother, who's John Cena.
John Cena, yeah.
Yeah. So,
have you read all the critics? I mean, I'm going to watch
so
it.
So, and I love my friend. No, not yet. Not yet, no. I'll watch it. But
yeah.
My friend Aaron, AC,
yeah.
Been on the show. Him and Dusty are massive fans of these movies. And he said, just so you know, I'm coming from the standpoint of this, I love this franchise.
But, even Hobbs and Shaw?
He goes, but this one, I could do without. Well, for one, they're in space in one point of the movie. I mean, there's just so much. He goes, the problem with this one, and I'm laughing at what you said, is he goes, because it lacks the emotional center, the heart of the other ones. I'm like, what movie are people watching that I don't watch? These are the most ridiculous movies.
Like, the first one was fine. Like, it was a point, it was Point Break. With cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is fine.
And then it got crazier and crazier and crazier.
And I would even say Tokyo Drift is pretty decent.
It's better than people
all over movie. People all around movie.
The problem with for Tokyo Drift that it's the witching hour of the franchise. It had nothing to do with Hobbs and except I mean, not sorry Hobbs, but Dom
and whatever Chris Walker. What's his name? Paul Walker's name, and it is Chris. Michael.
No, you're way off. Well, somebody will yell at us. Brian.
Yeah, it was Brian. Yeah. Because
we got to call Brian. No.
Yeah.
Brian's got a family.
Family. Even though now I have a family.
Now this family's got to go take care.
And I got to go do stuff even though I also have a family.
And according to The Rock, he didn't like Vin Diesel because Vin Diesel shows up late for the set.
Yeah.
They have to hold out for him to start shooting sometimes.
He's a fucking prima donna.
He released a song that he did. I mean, come on. Yeah. He's lost his mind.
He was a rapper before he was an actor, though.
Not a good one.
I didn't say he was good. I'm just saying he is.
And this song he released is not a rap song. It's a song he sings.
Yeah. It came out in the early pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, awful. And he had weird videos during the pandemic. He is...
Big D&D fan, though.
He's a more famous version of David Hasselhoff. That's the career path that he's taken. Last thing I'll bring up real quick, and we don't have to get too deep in it. I did read DC's death metal this week.
Really?
It was better than heavy metal. But speaking
of... Same world?
Sequel, direct sequel.
Okay.
The one thing I liked about it is it's the Antichrist. That's what the point of the book is. They go back to undo everything the Crisis has done by sucking the Crisis energy from all the events that are powering Perpetua, and I don't want to get into it. It's very convoluted. I gave it a 3 out of, I don't know if I sold this, but No Sudden Move, I did get a 4 out of 5, too.
Yes, you did.
Okay, but Death Metal, I'll give a 3 out of 5. It's not a bad read. But, you know, going back to the Fast and Furious franchise, this movie's a whole lot about hope. But I think what DC is missing in all these, they don't have any heart. None of these stories have heart anymore. There's nothing. The emotional point of these books are just lacking to me. And, like, this one, Wonder Woman's more of the big hero of the Trinity. But it's got moments that are fun, but it's got a whole lot of moments that are just like, oh, why can't they tell superhero stories? Here's what I'm tired of. We touched on it with Hickman's X-Men run. Mm-hmm. And with this, I like a little bit of reality in my stories.
Yeah.
X-Men doesn't take place in reality anymore. Now it's on a planet world or it's in the fantasy world for X of Swords. It's like, what was cool about the X-Men to me is they were in the real world and having to deal with... Yeah, that, you know,
real issues.
That in every big DC event, someone has reshaped reality in their image, and they have to undo it. And so there's no stakes. You know, all the people that are being murdered and killed and died, they just poof them right back into existence.
Yeah, that was the best part of like the X-Men or the Avengers is like them trying to save. That's why I like Spider-Man because he's the not to veer off. Did you want to rate it? Did you already rate it?
I put a 3 out of 5.
Okay. Like the Nick Spencer's run on Spider-Man, I don't think every story hits home, but like, Hoopla's about a year or 6 months behind on everything. Yeah. But like, his newest arc that he's running with is he's got to save the Green Goblin, which is Norman Osborn. My brain wasn't working for a second.
You were about to say
Reed Richards for a second.
No, I thought you were about to say which is Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, no, Norman Osborn and. From a character that I think is kind of ridiculous and stupid in the overall, but it's all of the other Spider-Men in the world saying, like, the world would be better if you didn't save him.
A real hero story. Like,
yeah,
what it means to be
like,
a hero.
I can't not do it because the consequences will be worse later. If you want a different story that is kind of fun and also is just a good heist, Ocean's 11 style thing, the Black Cat run by Jed Mackey. Pretty solid.
Okay.
I think there's 3 trades so far, 3 or 4. And it's fun. It's just a heist film or heist.
I'll check it out.
She's running away from like the.
I like Black Cat. I mean, Evil That Men Do was a great story with that Kevin Smith did. Although it was like 10 years between the second and third issue. But
no, this one's really good. And she brings in Spider Man, and she's always messing with him.
Yeah, because they were a thing at one time.
Yeah, and like she's constantly running with him. But it's fun. It's a good time. She's got a good little team of like guys around her. And it deals a lot with family.
Yeah, yeah. That's the theme of this episode is family. Yeah, I mean, I still read the comics. I still love the comics. But I'll be honest with you, too. Avengers a little bit has...
That's stupid, but it's mindless reading.
Marvel in general, like, again, we'll go back to King in Black. Before that, Carnage, the big Carnage one. Again... You demean the stakes when you take over islands or continents or planets, and then everything goes back to normal, and the people all go back to normal.
Yeah,
that's what I loved about Invincible. Is like it took place in real time,
exactly,
and real things happened. You know,
I feel like Jason Aaron's Thor run had less of a. It was fun, but it was more contained. Even the War of Realms was still.
Again, though, they took over an entire island of Manhattan in War of the Realms, and
it's true.
But I'll give Jason Aaron. I'll give him some leeway.
Well, yes. he's doing the Avengers thing.
Right well, now. But I mean, with Thor is a metaphysical person. He's an Asgardian, so you can go and do that stuff there, and you can do.
Yeah.
But like with the DC universe in particular, the two big events, like literally, is reshaped by Perpetua, and then in this one, the big bad is both Perpetua and the Darkest Knight. Which, for those that don't know, the Darkest Knight is the Batman who laughs. Gets killed, but they take his brain and put it in the Dr. Manhattan's body, and he becomes the Darkest Knight. And then he rises up to kill Perpetua and everything. And
I don't even know who Perpetua is.
She's the creator of the DC multiverse. It's stupid. It's really stupid.
See, that's why I like the one-off stuff. Like
it's gotten bad.
Like the White Knight stuff and everything.
Yeah.
Like I like those self-contained stories because it's fun. You don't. I had no interest in Batman for a long time.
Ironically, what we like about the DC in the comics are the things that we hate about DC in the theaters.
Exactly.
Like it's funny. Let's end on this. I haven't watched it yet. I need to rent it. Long Halloween Part 1, the animated, came out like this a week or two ago.
Oh, really?
I gotta check it out.
Man, I don't know, man. I'm gonna have to wait. Because I tried watching Did you try watching The Killing Joke? Did you watch The Killing Joke?
I did.
Did you get all the way through it?
Yeah.
And I did not enjoy it.
The Killing Joke also is a different book, too. It's a dark one.
The fact that they made it a cartoon, but like the whole, like, Barbara Gordon and Batman hooking up thing. I was like, this is
they changed too much in it. And then but again, Dark Knight Returns was pretty good in it. You know?
Really?
Yeah, that two-parter. That was a two-parter, and that was fun.
I didn't watch that one.
And there's been some really good ones.
There has.
Yeah.
I still think Assault on Arkham is one of the better ones.
That was a pretty fun
adult one that they could have made.
The first
Suicide Squad.
First Wonder Woman was a good one.
Did you watch that Suicide? Did we talk about that?
The trailer? Or the movie?
The
newest one. I mean, yeah.
Did we talk about that last episode?
No, we didn't. We can end on it.
Was it Killshot? What's his name? It's not Killshot. Idris Elba's character. There was a big...
I forget who he is in this one. He's not...
Uproar about... I think it's Killshot or something.
Yeah, he's not Deadshot. That was...
Yeah, that's different.
That was Will Ferrell.
Superman in the ICU by shooting with a kryptonite bullet.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's like, hey, you can't do that. And that's literally his origin story in the comics.
Yeah, and it's been done multiple times, you know. So, yeah. I think it looks great.
Yeah, I think it looks
they're
awesome.
Already doing a John Cena spinoff. So,
which
I don't know.
Which I think is HBO Max exclusive.
Yeah. So, a lot of things left coming from HBO Max. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think that was our episode.
I think so, too.
I think we knocked it out of the park.
Yep. We're having almost nothing.
Yeah, and since there's almost no one here, it's just you and me to say goodbye.
Hold on to your butts.
And I will play some music.